Welcome to the OHS Connect Knowledge to Action podcast series on risk communication. This is the second podcast in the series and is a continuation of our conversation with Dr. Peter Sandman, a risk communication speaker and consultant from the United States. In this segment, we discuss the three paradigms of risk communication. Peter, in our last discussion, you introduced us to the different paradigms of risk communication. I wonder if you can just describe each one of those for us in a little more detail and give us some examples of strategies that we could use.
Sure. I mean, that's a topic I could talk on for many days rather than just a few minutes, but let me just say a little bit about each paradigm. Precaution advocacy is what you do when people are insufficiently upset about a serious hazard, and you're trying to increase their outrage so that they'll take the risk more seriously. Probably the single most important thing to know about precaution advocacy is that it's a slog. It's a marathon, not a sprint. And the basic strategies are a lot like the basic strategies of public relations, because it's the same paradigm, an apathetic audience whose attention you're trying to grab and hold on to. So it's basic PR. Keep your message short, make it interesting, stay on message. The things that PR people learn are very much the strategies you need in precaution advocacy. The more complicated precaution advocacy strategies make use of persuasion theory. For example, it's well established that it's easier to motivate a behavior by appealing to needs or emotions or other non-cognitive motivators than with information. On the other hand, information is extraordinarily useful in validating a behavior and reducing the cognitive dissonance that people experience when they're doing something that doesn't make sense even to them. So based on that understanding, which is fundamental to persuasion theory, a lot of more sophisticated precaution advocacy occurs in two stages. In stage one, you try to motivate people to do something they're not accustomed to doing that you want them to do to protect themselves against a risk, without a lot of information, with appeals that are not cognitive. And then in the second stage, after you've got the behavior initially, the preliminary behavior, the foot in the door, then you reinforce the hell out of it with information. And people are not very good at learning how to do new things because of information, but they're very good at acquiring information to tell them why what they did was a smart thing to do. That's probably enough to say about precaution advocacy. Outrage management is the opposite corner of the hazard versus outrage map. It's what you do when people are very upset about a risk that you think is very small. And the strategies of outrage management are much more counterintuitive than the strategies of precaution advocacy. Health communicators are naturally pretty good at precaution advocacy, and I think on the whole pretty bad at outrage management unless they've actually studied it, unless they've learned how. Among the principles of outrage management, you listen rather than talk. In precaution advocacy, it's mostly you talking. In outrage management, it's mostly outraged people talking and you listening. You let them vent. Then when you finally start talking, and that's much later than you imagine, when you finally start talking to outraged people, you validate their valid concerns rather than rebutting their crap. Instead of telling them why they're wrong, I mean, there's obviously going to be things they're wrong about if they're excessively alarmed about what you consider to be a small risk, the temptation is to tell them how foolish they're being and to give them data about why they're wrong. And instead, you validate their valid concerns. You acknowledge their part of the truth, even if it's a small part of the truth. You acknowledge your own prior misbehaviors and current problems. You share control. You give away credit when outraged people persuade you or force you to make a change. You give them credit for that change rather than pretending you were going to do it anyhow. These are all, I think, very counterintuitive strategies. And whereas most of my clients do pretty decent precaution advocacy, unless they've worked really hard to learn how, they tend to do very poor outrage management. At the third corner, the third paradigm is crisis communication. When people are rightly upset about a genuinely serious risk, and as you might imagine, the core of crisis communication is validating people's justified concern. This is kind of interesting. The most common outrage management error is to act as if it were precaution advocacy and talk in sound bites, you know, lecture people instead of listening to them. The most common crisis communication error is to act as if it were outrage management and try to calm them down. And typically when clients bring me in crisis situations, they will say to me, how do we get people to calm down? And I will say, well, what do you want them to calm down for? This is a serious crisis. Don't you want them to take it seriously? You want to use that outrage. You want to mobilize that outrage. You don't want to tell them not to feel it. They're right to feel it. So the core strategies of crisis communication have to do with validating people's concern. The core sin in crisis communication is telling people not to worry. Besides validating their concern, among the other key crisis communication strategies are things like don't over-reassure, acknowledge uncertainty, give people things to do, don't worry too much about panic because panic is rare. Those are just sort of a potpourri of some of the strategies for each of these three paradigms.
Peter, what are some of the common pitfalls and organizational challenges associated with selecting and applying the appropriate risk paradigm?
Well, the way you ask the question is exactly the right way to ask the question. The single biggest pitfall is misunderstanding where you are on this map of the various kinds of risk communication. And it's not a misunderstanding because people ask themselves what kind of risk communication is needed and then make the wrong decision. It's much more common that people don't even ask the question. They're not asking themselves where they are on the map. And if you don't ask yourself where you are on the map, that is, how high is the hazard, how high is the outrage, how high is the hazard likely to get soon, how high is the outrage likely to get soon, if you don't ask those questions, you'll probably act as if everything were precaution advocacy. Sort of the default is to act as if people are apathetic and you're trying to get them to take the risk more seriously. And so you'll really mishandle crisis situations and outrage management situations because if you pursue the default strategies, you'll be doing precaution advocacy in a venue where precaution advocacy isn't the task. Once you've asked that question, or that set of questions about where are we on the map, then you have to keep asking them because where you are on the map changes. It changes depending on which side you're on. The risk communication map for vaccination safety is different if you're the health department than if you're an anti-vaccination activist. So it depends what your judgment is. It depends on who your audience is. And in some ways, most importantly, it depends on the life history of the situation. As situations evolve, the kind of risk communication they call for may be very different. A pandemic is a fine example. I mean, if before a pandemic, if you're trying to persuade people that another flu pandemic is possible, it may be more severe than the H1N1 pandemic we just got through, and you're trying to persuade, let's say, a community to allocate resources or people to do some preparedness of their own, then you're doing precaution advocacy. You're trying to persuade people to take the risk more seriously than they are now taking it. If the pandemic comes and it's severe, then we'll all be doing crisis communication. People will be upset. They'll be noticing that there are a large number of fatalities and perhaps no vaccine available yet. And they'll be upset, and rightly upset, and the task will be crisis communication. After a pandemic, the task is mostly outrage management. If the pandemic was severe, there are investigations about why we weren't prepared enough. If the pandemic is mild, there may be outrage management to be done about why we were so alarmist in our pre-pandemic warnings, and then it turned out mild. So there's a natural history for almost any crisis where you're doing precaution advocacy before the crisis, crisis communication during the crisis, and outrage management after the crisis. The basic principle, then, is to ask yourself where you are on the map and keep asking yourself with regard to your position, your audience's position, and the way the issue is maturing. Keep asking, am I still in the same place on the map, or has my location on the map changed, and I need to change my strategies to match?
Thanks, Peter. And thanks for joining us for this segment of our discussion with Peter Sandman. Join us next week as we continue our conversation.